Howdy. This is Greg Swan from BloodhoundBlog.net. What you're about to hear is an interview San Diego realtor and Bloodhound Blog contributor Chris Bird conducted with Redfin.com CEO Glenn Kelman. This podcast is news in two ways. First, Kelman discusses Redfin's move into the Southern California real estate market. But this interview also marks the first time that Kelman has been interviewed at length by a working real estate professional. Redfin is perhaps more famous for being famous than for any real estate success it has achieved. Real estate web bloggers have reacted with high dudgeon to the fawning press coverage the company has received in publications such as the New York Times. For the first time, Glenn Kelman was confronted with the kinds of questions working realtors want answered. How can Redfin justify defaulting on the buyer's agent's obligation to the client and still expect full compensation? Why does it complain of hostile treatment from other agents when it so often initiates those hostilities? How can a company with such an obviously high cost structure expect to show a profit as a discounter? As a testament to Chris Berg's style of questioning, the mailed fist and the velvet glove, Kelman at one point says, "I've never had to think so hard in an interview in my life." Alas, the audio quality of this podcast is less than ideal. Berg and Kelman met in a Starbucks in San Diego, and the background noise in the original recording was sometimes overwhelming. Luckily, Bloodhound Blog is blessed to have an audio engineer among our contributors. Realtor Alan Butler, who maintains a professional recording studio as a hobby, was able to scrub the podcast file to bring the voices out from the background noise. There will be Redfin news all over the real estate net today, but this will be the most thoroughgoing coverage you'll find. Chris Berg proves in this broadcast that no one can probe for real estate news like a thoughtful, well-informed insider.
Well, you called me, so, you know, obviously, my interpretation would be that I may stop on your talk show circuit.
Another notch in the belt.
Another
Chris.
Notch in the belt, too. And boy, if I had a nickel for every time. Another stop to promote, you know, Redfin coming to San Diego, so.
Well, that was part of the objective. I also did want to meet you. I'll never convince you of that. But when you read people's blogs and never meet them, it is this nerve-wracking but interesting experience to finally find them and see them face-to-face. But we are expanding to San Diego, Los Angeles, and Orange County. It's the largest market in the United States. It took us about a year to do it because we just weren't sure if we could offer a high-quality customer experience. We weren't sure if our model would actually be profitable. So we just stayed in two markets. Our investors have really wanted us to expand more quickly, but we had to switch to virtual earth so that we could build a nice map. We had to buy a customer database and get that working. We had to figure out what kind of agent was the right person to hire. We had to screw around with our training a lot because we wanted to get these people up to speed and be able to deliver consistent service. So it just took us a long time to get our ducks in order so that we could come down here, and hopefully we don't screw it up. We still got a few weeks left to get ready, and we're still scrambling.
And you said February 8th is your due date?
February 8th is the big day.
Okay.
And, you know, to tell you the truth, we're going to have an agent in Del Mar, an agent in Chino Hills, and an agent in Los Angeles area in Sherman Oaks, which isn't enough to cover the area. But the problem we have is that when we were in San Francisco, we hired all these agents to cover the geographic area. But then we didn't get any business for months and months.
Right.
And so they were just sitting around.
Now, your clients, and you said you had a slow start. There's been a lot of talk, and I know you've been reading the blogs about who indeed your clients are. And there are kind of two schools of thought, and I think they both may be right, so maybe you can help me with that. One is the exploitation avenue, and you know, we find it not all that curious that you aren't going instead of San Diego to maybe Wichita, next, or Laredo, Texas. So are you just preying on the markets that have obviously the highest median sale prices so you can actually make a buck with your model? And that's the one argument. And this is a long lead-in, Glenn, so hang with me. And then the other argument, of course, is that you're looking more at demographics and your target audience is the techie, do-it-yourself-er, I don't need no stinking agent. and that you're just looking for your niche market, and that's all you'll ever be.
Well, actually, it's both.
Okay.
The simple way we think about markets is we're looking for nerds living in nice houses. The model doesn't work as well in Wichita, and we're hoping that we can make it work that way. We want to be a nationwide service. And as we build richer services to automate more of the process and to let people do more self-service in the escrow side of it, we might get there. Already the cost of supporting a transaction has gone down for us as we've just gotten better at figuring out how to make our agents more productive and happy, how to give them better tools. But it's still going to be a challenge to go into every market and try to be productive. And I just think anybody starting a business like ours would just look at the markets where you have a demographic that you naturally understand. I mean, I say nerd when I consider myself to be one of those people. I've always been interested
in
computers.
Some of my best friends are nerds.
There you go. Thank you.
There you go.
So you want to focus on a market that you understand, but you also want to focus on a market where you can be profitable. What investors worry about with Redfin is the margin in the model. So today, we generate about a 50% margin at real estate operations. So for every dollar we make, we have to pay 50 cents to one of our agents. And we have to pay our agents more than we initially thought, just because we wanted to get good people. You know, people will walk out the door if you don't pay them what's right. So that's put more pressure on the model, but we've also, as I said, gotten more efficient. So we've got it around 50 cents, and that's not enough to pay our developers. So if you take 50 cents off every transaction, and you only do 300 transactions in a year, which is what we did last year, you can't afford to have a development staff of 10 or 20 engineers. So partially we hope that we can scale the business out to other markets and make it up in volume, as you said.
Yeah, but what about other demographics? I mean, do you think even if you were in every market conceivable that there are enough nerds, as you affectionately called them, rich nerds, to actually make you profitable? Can you sustain a profitable business?
Well, first of all, nothing ventured, nothing gained. I don't sleep easy at night because we always worry about the business. And so I don't want to promise anyone that this is going to be a raging success. I just thought it was worth a shot. But having said that, the premise behind the business is that we would start with one demographic that would most naturally gravitate toward the model and then build on that success. It's just like your husband talked about referrals in one of his blog posts. We're the same way. We didn't do any business in San Francisco, not because people didn't know who we were. We actually had all sorts of press when we launched. We didn't do any business because the first guy to do it is crazy. And it's after that when he starts telling people, well, I had a good experience and things like that we get business. So about half of our business is referrals for somebody talk to somebody else. And as a result, we don't have much of an acquisition cost. I mean, I think you guys are in the same situation where once you get a market going and people really know what you stand for, you're fine. But answering your question more directly, in Seattle, we started out 25 to 35-year-old males in high technology. They almost all work for Amazon and Microsoft. And now we've got grandmas coming in, we've got people with their kids, and that's because they've heard from those people, from those early adopters, that the business gave good service. So hopefully we can cross the chasm. Hopefully we can reach other types of people, but we know that we've got to start with the folks most likely to work with us.
Right. I'm just lots of background noise. We'll see if this works. I'm just more than a little skeptical because I know from our standpoint here in San Diego, Steve and I, we have a half dozen clients a year who are Qualcomm engineers. Now, there's somebody who would logically be more inclined to use a Redfin model than a traditional agent. And they have options. You know, there are the discounters, the help you sells, the assist to sells, the realties, and they could have gone there, but they chose not to. And just because you have the ability to do a lot of this footwork and to save money, and I'm doing the quotation mark thing in the air, doesn't mean that you necessarily have the time or that you perceive, you know, we have a time value too when we get big and have jobs and have competing demands. So that's why we'll see.
Oh, yeah. And We've never predicted the demise or extinction of the industry. We think that plenty of people want an agent to bring his expertise and help them find their dream home. We're just trying to offer an alternative. I mean, you know what I'm going to say now.
Yeah, no, I know. Want to keep going?
Well, if you already know, I don't have to say it, but we just want to offer great service from offer to close. We think that's where, if you're an agent, the most satisfying part of the job is that once somebody's found a house, you help them win it on good terms. That's what excites the people who work for us as agents. They're not so good at the sales and marketing sometimes. They're more sort of customer service-oriented people.
I've got a couple of issues. I'll go
sure.
A little bit off subject first. And by the way, I don't intend this to be confrontational. I'm so delighted we had the chance to talk because I've got a gazillion questions for you. You say that you see your model coexisting with that of the traditional brokerage in the market, and you don't necessarily want to change the dynamics of the industry. You just want to survive among us and with us. And yet, it seems to me like part of your marketing strategy is to, denigrate, I guess, traditional real estate agents. It's almost like that image that you're creating of yourselves as renegades. Yes, as the bad boys is part of the marketing strategy. Case in point, we've all seen your little sidebar ad in Google that says, go see the site that realtors don't want you to see. And when I was searching, I was on your website months and months ago. In fact, signed up, and I think that's how we first came in contact via email. I noticed that you have little scripts for your buyers. So, when they get to the door and they're wanting the listing agents to open up, there's little scripts about how you can deceive and get around the evil agents who are wanting to circumvent our better model that gives you money in your pocket. So is that part of the marketing strategy in fact?
So why don't we talk about that? First of all, just to clarify, I don't have a beef with agents. I do have a beef with the industry. I don't think the industry treats agents very well, and I don't think it always treats consumers very well. The brokerages recruit more agents than a market needs because they want the split or they want the desk fee. And then the way that agents are paid puts pressure on the agents to do things that aren't right for the client. And I'm not saying that agents do that. I'm just saying that the way the industry set up isn't the way any of us, if we set it up from the outset, would probably have it be. Now, the examples that you cite, Kevin Bohr talked to me about that in New York at Inman, and I've been a little slow to respond, but we're shipping a new version of our site, and we're not going to tell people that we're going to call the seller if a listing agent blocks us. I tried to explain to Kevin, and I'll explain to you, that we probably have a difference of opinion, not that listing agents are evil or anything else, but we do have a difference of opinion that if you list a property and you tell the customer that you're going to show the property to interested buyers, you should show it. But Kevin kind of talked to me about it when we release the new version of our site, not the one in San Diego, but about 3 weeks from now, we rewrote that area of our site, and it won't happen. It seems that calling the seller is a convention you don't want to break.
I appreciate that.
The one time that I think we will do it is sometimes, and I'm not saying everybody does this, it only happens once in a while, but it intimidates the whole market when it happens. We do have agents that say, if you make an offer, I'm not going to present it to the seller. It's only happened 3 times, maybe 4, but word gets around if that happens, and so then we do call the seller and say, hey, this agent has said something that's got our client scared, and then we would do something about it. But I feel like we overreacted to that case, and now we put ourselves in a situation where we're not in a good place.
Well, I've got to believe that instances like that are going to be few and far between. Hopefully they're the exception to the rule. I mean, obviously it's a blatant violation of...
I know. And the reason I'm not upset about it is when it happens, you worry because you've got this client that's practically in tears on the phone and...
Right.
And all that, but I know that if there's one gold standard in real estate, it's that you present every offer. And I think what really happens is that sometimes we've had listing agents talk to our customers and say, well, if you work with me, you'll get a better deal. And just taken that one step too far. We don't mind when listing agents solicit customers. I mean, aside from the dual agency, which would be a problem I have with the overall dynamic, mm-hmm. I don't really mind.
And that's a completely different discussion.
Right, right. I'm not even trying to take you off track.
Yeah.
Last thing I wanted to respond to is the ad. I'm embarrassed that it's come up twice. We will stop running that ad. Everybody buys our trade name and advertises off of it, but I think that particular slogan doesn't work well for me.
Well, I don't think it works well if you are sincere in saying that you want to live among and not annihilate. How is that?
But I don't like, I mean, I don't want you to think I'm talking out of two sides of my mouth.
Sure.
I don't mind the National Association of Realtors sometimes, but some of the things they do really bother me. I feel like they've had chances in their meetings to talk about the level of training that an agent should have, the level of professionalism, and they've quashed that. And they've quashed it because the brokerages want to bring in more people that aren't trained and have them pay desk fees. And that may be anathema to the audience, but there's still issues that I have with the concept of the NAR certifying whether you're a real estate agent or not.
And I think if you query 10 realtors, you're going to get the same response from at least 9 of them. Yeah, we too have issues with that, and clearly there are too many agents out there who don't subscribe to the level of professionalism that we would all like to see. But, how much of that is training? Obviously licensing requirements are too lenient, so we don't have a good vetting process at the beginning. But then, too, I always go back to my DMV analogy. Any industry, real estate is among them. It's kind of like a trip to the DMV. You're going to see all flavors and sizes. You're going to see a cross-section of America. And in any job, in any industry, there are a lot of great people who take it seriously and do right by their clients. And then there are going to be those that don't. So, I think it's a two-part issue. But
can I follow up on that, though?
Yeah,
just one thought, which is people talk about real estate agents as a profession, which is what I think it is and what it should be. But what a profession literally means is that you profess. Doctors take a Hippocratic oath. Lawyers pass the bar, and they have to hold up their hand and swear to a set of principles. They may represent criminals. They may represent tobacco companies, but they represent them in the best way they can. And I think the best real estate agents would really like to see the profession take that code more seriously. And I'm not trying to win Pollyannish points, but that's the area where I really feel that people, if we don't reform ourselves, the industry doesn't reform itself, people won't feel good about real estate agents. I remember when my family bought a home, how we felt about a real estate agent, which was a friend of the family. And today I think there's more suspicion because there's different types of agents out there. Because
you'll get
the industry,
no argument.
Right. Okay.
Great. Well, there was a segue back there about 10 minutes ago, but I'll try to recapture it. One of the things I was also curious about, well, it was related to the fact that you're really, in a lot of realtors' eyes, and I'll say I include myself in this category, delegating what should be your responsibilities as a buyer fiduciary. You're changing the job description, putting a lot of the duties, liability perhaps, onto the listing agent. Benefit your clients. When you get a little bit of backlash from realtors and listing agents in particular, that's the genesis of a lot of that. And then I guess that was just a statement. I'm kind of curious because a lot of us, I don't think, are real clear on what exactly your agents do during the course of a transaction. We know that there's an online form. I tell you what price. I fill in the blanks. You generate an offer for me. I sign it. We go. Let's say we get an acceptance. Who the heck needs the termite guy? Who's there for the physical inspection? Who's there to do an agent visual? coordinate current closings, all of those things that we deal with on a daily basis.
Right. So let me answer that question, but also deal with the work that the listing agent has to do in a Redfin model.
Oh yeah, we'll get back to that.
Do you want to, which one do you want to do first?
Oh, you go. You pick.
Well, I've been concerned because I feel about the concern that you raised that listing agents have to do more work than they once did if a Redfin buyer wants to see a property. I came into this somewhat naively thinking that if a listing agent signs up to sell a house, that he should show that house, or she should show that house to every interested buyer. But what I'm not interested in doing is disrupting the whole ecology of a fairly delicate system. I don't subscribe to the idea that listing agents are fat cats. Most people in real estate are busting their butt to make ends meet. I know enough about real estate to know that. So for one thing, we changed our policy. And we now offer home tours, and we are pretty busy with that. It's another reason that our model has pinched a little bit. We would have picked up more efficiency gains.
We might be able to hear you again. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We would have picked up a lot more efficiency gains if we weren't doing that. And I think we did that in part because we felt that we wanted to hold up our end of the deal. And long term, I do feel that buyers should be able to see a property without having an agent with them. Whether it's contacting the seller, which is actually how I saw the property that that I ended up buying. This lady let me into her house, and she said, "This is a wonderful house," and she had an agent.
I'll speak personally here. I have no qualms with that. As primarily a listing agent, on a daily basis, Steve and I are letting people into our listings. It's just how you get them sold. And our first responsibility and our first loyalty is obviously to the seller. We get calls. My uncle Bob lives in Topeka, and he's going to be writing the offer. Fine. I think the important thing is that we know up front, and one of the things that concerned me about your website and the little scripts that I read months ago, and maybe this has changed, is that there was a certain amount of deception that was subtly implied to get into these properties.
Yeah, and you know, if you point that out to me, we'll change it. But
you know, if I know, then maybe, yes, it's 4:30, and I'm not going to drop everything to get over there at 4:35, but clearly I'm going to make arrangements for your client to come through, or if I've got an open house, send it.
I agree 100%. Okay. You know, if we find out, we get this not all the time, but once in a while, and every agent knows this, that if somebody says, well, I've been... And this isn't quite to your question, but it's similar. I've been working with somebody, but I decided I didn't want to pay the commission, and now I want to make an offer through you. We don't touch it with a 10-foot pole. And the reason is we don't need the business, we don't want procuring cause, and we don't think it's right. Even if we didn't thought we could win a lawsuit because we got them to sign a buyer's agency agreement, we're just not interested in that. And that's been a rule from day one. And now on our website, we make it clear that if you call a listing agent, you need to say that you're a Redfin customer. And that listing agent can then make a decision about whether or not that should be prioritized. So let's talk about the other half of this, which is what happens when an offer comes in. People think that when you click submit that we just fill out the paperwork, but I think we do a lot of the things that a traditional agent would do. So for example, we're going to get all the information, and then we're going to call the listing agent and say, how many offers are coming in? Does the buyer or does the seller want to leave early or late? Are they sensitive to the amount of cash that's in the deal? You know, what are you looking for here so that we can maximize our chances of success? And then we'll call the buyer back and kind of go back and forth and figure out where the terms really ought to be. From there, you know, we'll draw up the paperwork, get something for them to sign. If we aren't in a competitive situation, to be honest, we fax it. If we feel like there's multiple offers, we get our butt over there. We haven't always done that, and we felt like it put us at a disadvantage, so now, you know, we get in the car and present the offer in person so we can give the buyer the best shot of winning. And then you get to mutual acceptance. You've got this long tail. We actually have a whole bunch of transaction coordinators that tend to take over the deal at that point. So we got to make sure they get a mortgage. We got to deal with the inspection. We'll go out, handle the inspection.
Who does that? The agent?
The agent.
A licensed
but
person?
Sometimes a field agent. So we have licensed agents who work as transaction coordinators, who work as what's called a field agent. Field agent isn't someone who actually negotiates with the client. They tend to be more junior. I think it's a very similar model to, you know, a top producer who's got a team of people that help him do showings and things like that. So a field agent will go out and look at the property, and will go out and handle the inspection. Unless somebody feels that, as a buyer, I have this personal connection to the person who negotiated my deal. And I got to tell you that that's where it gets hairy. Is sometimes they say, no, I want the person who negotiated the deal to go out and talk to the inspector and things like that. And we try to avoid that, because the people who negotiate tend to be more experienced, and we pay them more money, and they've got other clients that they have to deal with.
Yeah, the one difficulty I see, and help me understand this, because it sounds like, okay, if I go with a traditional agent, say I personally have a buyer, I know about concurrent closings and the issues, and I've got one closing in a different county, and I know I've got to, you know, close one 2 days prior to wiring and closing the next. My client knows they can call me 7 days a week, day or night. They're going to get me totally familiar with their file, and that I am actually personally tracking all of the issues and all of the duties that are associated with the transaction. I get the impression that with Redfin, you know, I would dial the 1-800 number, maybe, and with all of these arms on the same body, are they really connected? And do they really know what the other one's up to?
We've had problems with that, actually, and we've had to switch our model because it doesn't work to have 8 arms on one body. So we still have a team approach where there's a field agent and a transaction coordinator that helps out an agent. We still have a 1-800 number, and you call and you kind of go into a round robin if you're a new client. But once you get an agent, once you're working with someone, that person may not do all the work. He may have this field assistant or transaction coordinator help him or her, but he's going to be your point of contact. And then we've also had to change the hours of operation. So now they give out their cell phone numbers and they're available all the time, which means that our volume goes down. We told them that if you're going to have to take calls late at night, you don't have to come into the office as much. We're going to be more flexible about a lot of different things, so we can accommodate the kind of stuff you have to go through. The saving grace for the agents is I do feel that they like being in a team environment where when they do want to go to Hawaii, you know, they stop taking new deals for a week, 2 weeks or something like that. And they explain to the people that they're still engaged with that this is what's going to happen, and then they go away for 5 days or something like that. And they can do that because other people are going to cover for them. It's always a problem, though. I mean, I don't want to lie to you. That is something we talk about all the time, which is, you know, how can we have that one person always be available when he's doing more volume? It's
because
a challenge.
Isn't that an essential or very important component of the value side of this equation? And that's really what we're talking about. Can you provide the full service? Can you provide the value that the traditional real estate agent provides and within your model? And
yeah.
I'm not convinced you can't. But.
Right. And time will tell. I mean, I think it also depends on what you value. I mean, one of the characterizations that we always bristle at a little bit is this idea that we're a discounter, and the comparison we always make is that Amazon isn't like Half-Price Books. Half-Price Books tries to do exactly what the corner bookstore does, but just for half the price. And Amazon tries to do some of the things that a bookstore does, but a lot of the things that it doesn't. And we want to offer a different service and be clear with agents that we work with and with consumers that, hey, you know, these are the things we're good at, and these are the things that we're not good at. And what we want to be really good at is winning people a house on really good terms. And that's the area where I feel really passionate, where I feel like if you pay people on customer satisfaction, or you give them a bonus based on the responses the customers have on a survey, and you don't pay them to close, and you don't pay them a piece of the action on the close, they're going to get a better price for their client.
Okay, I think that's all noble, and you know, if it works, great. I'm going to take an uncharacteristic big picture approach here, and let's assume for a minute that you achieve true world domination, that you have that a significant majority of the market just absolutely loves and embraces your model and flocks to it. Don't you think success on that level could in fact be your failure? I mean, couldn't this in theory lead completely to elimination of the coffee, which is what your business depends on to survive? Because the listing side of it is really not where you're going with this.
It's a good question. We list houses and we pay a co-op fee. And you know, we sort of ask ourselves, what if there were only red fence on the planet? Mm-hmm. You know, what if the parasites had to eat the parasites?
To
put it your way, which is not how we would put it, because we don't think of ourselves that way. And I think what would happen is that buyers and sellers would be showing each other the properties, and they would be using an online service to draw up the terms of the offer and give them legal guidance and counsel. So I do think that in our world, the end game is one in which the consumer is more self-sufficient in finding the home, but gets better service. We would submit humbly. Our aspiration is to offer better service, handling the negotiation and handling the paperwork. We think that's an area where we can really excel.
Yeah, I guess it's very divergent opinions, and this is one area where I don't agree with Greg Swan. Sorry, Greg. He and Ardell, I believe, too, they have the sense that the co-op fee is the buyer's money. I can't disagree more. And the minute sellers believe that we've got a bunch of unrepresented or quasi-represented buyers going around doing their own search without an agent directing that effort, where's the need to offer the co-op any longer? And so that's my question.
Yeah, and I think ultimately, you know, we could get into a world where the buyer pays to be represented and the seller pays to be represented.
And that might not be a bad world to live in.
And that might not be a bad world. I think it creates a conflict of interest that essentially the buyer's agent is being paid by the seller. And the reason the seller wants the buyer's agent to make more when the house sells for more is because it's in the seller's interest, not because it's in the buyer's interest. So, you know, we're trying to accommodate the structure the way that it is now, believe it or not. But again, if you and I drew up what real estate should be like, I think it might be different. And I think there'd be a place for the traditional agent and a place for Redfin in that world, too. In Redfin's case, what we would be doing is charging a flat fee. I've never had to think so hard in an interview in my life, by the way.
I have a lot of latent demand here, a lot of pent-up energy.
Normally, people say, so you have a website? And I'm like, yes, we do.
I'm sorry. We can make it lighter.
No.
This is good.
It's way more fun, actually. So all I was going to say is that in that world, which I've given a lot of thought to, too, I mean, you don't want to just take advantage of the industry. You want to participate in the industry in a way that you think takes it to where it should be long-term. And long-term, I think buyers are going to pay for service and sellers are going to pay for service, and they're going to pay according to the value that they get. And we say at Redfin all the time, imagine that our service is not a price advantage and that we have to deliver better service, because we're going to be in a place where there's going to be somebody that offers way less than we do. Someone is going to bottom feed and be a lower priced option than we are.
Well, and I tell you, the industry dirty little secret is that exists now among traditional agents, you know, whether we want to admit it or not. We call them listing agent shoppers. And as times got tougher in the last year and a half or so in the market, we're seeing a lot more of that, and the information technology too has fed that, obviously, with all of this information at your fingertips, and this is your target market. The red finish buyer is going directly to the listing agent thinking there is something in it for them, and there usually is. You know, business is business, and okay, I can take three, or I can take three plus something, and then you get into the whole dual agency issue, which we won't go there. So where are you going next? San Diego today, not Wichita. I hear you're going to Boston.
Yeah, well, we'd like to go to Boston, Washington, D.C., and Chicago.
What a coincidence. All high-priced markets.
Why wouldn't you?
Okay, well, that just, you know.
I just don't view that as exploitative.
You're 100% noble, then, and you're...
No, and I want to be clear about that I have my personal reasons for enjoying my work. I really find it meaningful at sort of a tactical level. I like writing blogs, and I like doing all the little things that I get to do every day, but I'm also able to sleep at night because I feel like we're doing something good for real estate. But Redfin won't be self-sustaining. It'll lay off all of its employees. It'll be a dismal, grisly end if we don't find a way to make money. And so it's always been the case for me that to keep doing what I like doing, we got to make money. And I don't really apologize for that. I don't feel like I've ever concealed that. We're not a .org. We're not a .edu. We're a .com, which means we're a company. And
guess what? My personal goal is not to be a nonprofit organization either, so I absolutely respect that angle.
Right, so I think there's a way to be a capitalist and to build a business that helps people do whatever they want to do, that work for that business, that's self-sustaining, and still do something you believe in. And you know, people who look for us to crawl naked through broken glass to a shrine just to prove how optimistic
we are.
When
you do that, I want to be there.
Yeah.
And one more thing, and disjointed as it is, so I'm going to take the leap here that you would stand to benefit a lot from a national MLS system.
Yeah, probably. I mean, to tell you the truth, the way that we would probably benefit the most is if the MLS started to fragment, because we want people to come to our website and be able to see listings from a lot of different places. So we're sort of anticipating that over time, I think Greg is wrong about Zillow. Craigslist still gets more postings than Zillow does, but there's also Google Base. And if the MLS starts to fragment, it won't be good for the consumer. But what will be good is if, you know, there can be a website that can aggregate all of that. So we're sort of having to anticipate that, you know, as more inventory leaves the MLS, that we've got to figure out a way to have somebody be able to come to our site and see all of it. And that's another end game that we worry about. We'd rather not have to write, you know, listing suckers that go out and suck in stuff from other places, but if we have to, we will.
So when you get to San Diego and I go on your site and I want to look at the homes for sale so I can go out and do my own shopping, you have an IDX arrangement. Is that where your listings are being fed? And in San Diego, that's pretty much 100% in the MLS, so that's good. Which brings me to, you've got your little bloggers. I find this intriguing. Your little army that you send out to the open houses to write up about and take pictures.
Well,
How's that going before time for a frat machine in the background, huh?
Yeah. Some of the bloggers are people I consider friends, so I can't call them little bloggers.
Okay.
But
I meant that affection.
No, I know. I just wouldn't want them to. I wouldn't want them to hear me agree to that. And how is it going? Well, I think we've learned that we almost have to hold ourselves up to a New York Times standard. You know, the conversation that we have with the bloggers every time is, especially if you're going to say something critical about a listing, it has to be an absolute fact. It cannot be, it looked like water damage, it cannot be, you know, you need to establish exactly what you saw, and you need to say what you saw without any inferences. It does give you pause when a seller calls and he says, this is my life's investment, and you have written a blog post that denigrates it. And we've had one blogger leave, but we're proud of what we've produced. And the reason we're proud is because we are militant about it being factual and candid and open. Yeah, there are people that want to score points by being sort of clever and punchy,
right,
and that's not acceptable at the expense of a fact.
That aspect of your program really bothers me as a listing agent, and I'm curious, what's the point?
Well, let me tell you why I like it. So, for some odd reason, I started from the defensive position on that question. Why I like it is that if you're a buyer and you sit at home and you're trying to figure out whether to go see a property, what you really want is to be able to ask a friend, well, did you see it? What did it look like? What's not in the listing description? And that information is really valuable. So you can find out more information about a Pez dispenser on eBay. There's commentary where people say this is good, this is bad, the seller's good, the seller's bad, than you can about a listing. And I do think, and this is one area where we probably disagree, but from the perspective of an internet-oriented person, the idea that the listing agent controls the whole conversation isn't fair. And maybe the best analogy is, the most personal one for me, is that when Plumtree Software, this company that I worked at, went public, I was an officer at the company, and there were all these discussion boards about the company, and they said horrible things. I mean, if you actually, I couldn't read them, because you know, they just said good things and bad things. But if you read enough of it and you got addicted to it, yeah, you'd see that this guy's a jerk and they don't know what they're doing and they're going to go out of business, and other people who aren't shorting the stock saying other things. And at some level, I just feel like we put ourselves on the market and the conversation is good for the economy, it's good for the market. And that's the way I feel about listings, too.
Well, can I share my spin on that? Nothing personal. I don't think a home is a Pez dispenser or a company. You know, a home is private, it's personal, and somehow that just feels icky. Obviously, when they have a camera in tow at an open house taking photographs of my client's home, personal, private, that even offends me on a greater level. And you say, well, why should the listing agent control the one side of the conversation? This gets back to a traditional model versus a Redfin. As a buyer's agent, I'll wear that hat for a moment. I guarantee you in my area, the primary area that I focus in of say, 12,000, 15,000 homes, I have seen every single listing on the market. So all my buyer has to do is pick up the phone and call me, and I can describe it. So, you know, sending out people who are just writing about this and infiltrating, if you will, not for the purposes of seeing it and looking for a home. But
just a couple factual corrections.
Okay.
Small facts. I think the gist of your point is valid. The bloggers don't take pictures of the interior without permission. The only photo they can take is from the street, dead on. If they take it from an angle, we don't even like that, because they could show the house in an unflattering way that doesn't represent its true character.
Good.
And then, you know, the bloggers always ask whether they should identify themselves, and we say yes. Whether that happens every time, I can't certify, but I can tell you that I've never been asked and said, you know, don't ask, don't tell, or anything like that.
I came down pretty hard on that, and I will rethink my position. My knee-jerk reaction is not comfortable with it. But
usually when we blog about a property, it's in the interest of the seller. It generates more visibility for the product. And if anybody sees the house, they're going to see what the blogger sees anyway. So if I were selling a house, I would want one of these people to come in. And I would also tell you that they tend not to be critical, nasty people. They tend to be real estate mavens. Like, most of them are freelance journalists who happen to have a real estate habit, where they go and look at open house on Sunday anyway. And the one thing they have, is they do have strong opinions. There are people that, you know, if it's not a Cape Cod, they're not going to like it or whatever kind of architecture they like. We've had to tell them, hey, you know, if you're going to have an opinion like that, just say, look, I've got an itch for this type of architecture or that type of architecture. So there's one lady that works in Seattle that likes mid-50s modern, and just every house she likes, I find atrocious. Like, I just want to look at some of these and say, you've got to be kidding me.
Well, but yeah, that's the nature of the beast. I mean, anytime you have somebody blogging, you're going to have, it's going to be a subjective thing. So don't think you're going to avoid that.
Right. But it's still a work in progress on that front. We're pretty sensitive to the to the perilous nature of blogging about a property that somebody has worked their butt off to get ready to list.
Yeah, they're not all set. Didn't mean to be testy.
No, you weren't. You've been so nice.
I just want to hear your opinion. So you're off to the Union, the San Diego Union next.
Why did they call it that? Who knows?
Yeah, we all sent you off there. This is gonna. We won't go there.
All right, we're still on.
Yeah, we're still on. What are you? Besides, you know, obviously me, little old me, and probably other bloggers in the area, the San Diego Union. What are you guys gonna do to generate buzz? Name out when you have your coming out party.
Yeah, I don't want there to be any mystery.
Free ice cream.
We've hired male strippers to ride camels through the Gaslamp District.
That should be effective.
With invitations in their teeth to come look at our houses. No. I think we're going to be on Channel 10.
One hump or two.
I could make a joke about that, but I won't.
Make it.
No, that's okay. So all I was going to say is we're going to be on Channel 10. We're going to be in the Union Tribune, and we talk to you. I've been in my hotel room this morning. We're not as promiscuous as you think.
So you don't even have to go to the Union after talking to
me. Oh, no, we are going to the Union after.
I was saying, you don't have to. We had this conversation. That should be enough, huh?
Call it good.
Turn them off, yeah. Well, good luck.
Okay, thanks for the interview.
Oh, thanks.
Hi, everybody. Bye, everybody.
Bye.